This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. That's right. It's Trainer Talk presented by Basic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and we are coming to you from our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Want to extend a very special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM Channel 206, and of course all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net, and you can always access that live streaming on your computer, your smartphone, your tablet, whatever it might be. All there for you, horseracingradio.net. JT, good evening, my friend.
Good evening. Glad to be here. Very excited to have Charlie Baker on our show tonight.
Yeah, it's one of the cool things about this program, and we say this an awful lot, is that we get to spend some time and bring to the forefront some of the stories in thoroughbred racing that aren't often told. And there are so many great stories out there.
Yeah, and this man has just taken Saratoga by storm, and you hear people in the grandstand, who's this guy?
Well, we're going to find out over the course of the next hour as we are indeed joined by trainer Charlton Baker. Goes by Charlie. He's the son of a trainer, and he was born and raised just across the street from Caymanas Park in Jamaica. Now, that's not Jamaica, New York. That's Jamaica, the country. He began training in the U.S. in 1997. Since that time, he has saddled 1,427 winners with more than $24 million in purse earnings. And as Jude just mentioned, he has developed quite a knack for winning races at the Spa. And that's one heck of a knack.
Yeah, that's a great knack to have.
Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks, guys.
All right, so we're sitting here on August 17th. 2016, and to date, you have saddled 14 starters at this current Saratoga meet. You have 6 wins and 2 seconds. That's a 43% winning percentage. What's the secret? Yeah,
I got some nicer horses than I have in the past, so that's pretty much the main secret.
Yeah, it's always good to have those horses in the barn. I know you got a couple that ran races that look like they're sitting on a win next time, too. What's the over and under on the wins for the Saratoga meet, do you think?
You know, it's hard to make a call on that because this meet is such a tough meet. Although we're doing that good, it's still hard to make a call because you might think you're sitting on a good thing and someone, two other person is sitting on a great thing. So I'm thinking hopefully we can get up to 8 or 9. If that would be a great number. But right now, I'm just going to take it as it comes. I'm not going to make a prediction on that.
You don't want to count your chickens before they're hatched.
No, because it's such a tough meet. You never know. You might be thinking you got a great one coming up, and someone else got a two other person got. It's a tough meet. It's just one of those meets where it's not like a dominant aqueduct meet where you know you're sitting good. It's always they're all just coming from all over the place. And there's a lot of great trainers there. I mean, it's a competitive meet.
So catching Chad Brown, probably not on your radar at this time?
No, not on my radar at all. Chad is going great.
Yeah, what's that like when you open the past performances and you see, you know, Chad Brown's got 2 in, Pletcher's got 2 in, you know, then you got Kieran McLaughlin, he's got 1 in. You know, what's that like? And now here you are, you know, with a small stable, and you got to run against these guys all the time. That's a little disconcerting, isn't it?
Well, you know what? It's all about the horses. I think I got a horse that is competitive with their horses, I'm feeling good. I mean, we don't have definitely have the stock they got, but at a certain level, we got horses that can match it up okay. So that's where we can do compete. But it's pretty much we want to compete. So it's not about the name. It's about pretty much the stock that we're running against them, pretty much when it comes to that relation. I'm pretty confident in myself, so I'm not really worried about the names. I'm worried about it. Because my horse can match up with a fair horse or got an equal ability.
It's a really interesting dynamic, Charlie, because yeah. You're based at Finger Lakes, and you can have a horse that looks like an absolute star at Finger Lakes, and you bring them to Saratoga, you go to the major leagues, and all of a sudden they're just an average horse. How do you know you have a horse that's the right fit for Saratoga?
Well, you know what? Before, when I just started out training, I was at Finger Lakes, I started making my way to Belmont. You never knew. I never knew it, but I've over the years, I kind of get the feel for a horse that will do okay there. But when I started out, I used to bring those horses to Belmont from after Finger Lakes were done for the winter. I'll bring them to Aqueduct, and they get their head added to them, basically, because they just didn't match up. And over the years, you know, I started getting better horses, and Finger Lakes started, we're going to make our inroad into Belmont, and we started. So at first, you don't know. It's but once you get the feeling for Belmont and the type of horses there and the difference, you pretty much have a feeling when they can compete there. And it's just, it's a two different class of horses. Finger Lakes, they go fast, but at New York, on the bigger circuit, they go fast and they finish fast. Finger Lakes, they go fast and they'll coast home. Down there, they go fast and they finish fast. So it's a difference with the horses there. The cheap speed and real speed.
Yeah, it's a matter of pace. Huh?
Yeah, pace and finishing. A cheap horse won't finish as good. A better horse will finish up as fast as close to as fast as he goes out there. Sorry.
Charlie, you've been doing this at Saratoga for several years now, and you've kind of made your mark as being a guy that can come in, whether it's with a shipper from Finger Lakes or from horses that you now have stabled at Saratoga, and you've proven you can win races there at a very rapid rate. Are you still somewhat under the radar, though?
Yeah, pretty, I am. I mean, there's a lot of good trainers out there. I mean, a lot of guys in my spot that doesn't get the best horses don't. You know, and the stock is not up to spot. I'm still on the radar, pretty much. I think this meet Saratoga kind of put me up a little more, show me up a little bit more, doing as good as I'm doing right now. But that's business, you know what I'm saying? It's a business.
I think they may raise the Jamaican flag out there in the infield if you keep winning like this.
Yeah, we can get Usain Bolt to come out.
Yeah, let's do that. let's put that to rest. The big conversation on social media last night about Usain Bolt and Bob Marley. What's the final word on that? Who's the greatest?
Well, no, there won't be a comparison to Bob Marley. Bob Marley's in a class by himself. But as far as sports concerned, Usain Bolt is the guy, but Bob Marley, as far as everything in Jamaica is concerned, he's in a class of my own.
Where do Sean Bridge Mahan and Rajiv Mirage fit into that discussion?
Well, when they're into the horse racing, they fit very high up in the horse racing community in Jamaica. They're very. I mean, Jamaica is a small country, and most of the country does gamble, and they're all into horse racing, so they're eyeing that as far as the community concerned.
I've been to Caymanas Park, and
have you?
Yeah, and I loved it there, and I was so impressed with the owners and trainers and how much pride they take in their horses. When you go to the paddock at Caymanas Park, all the jockey silks are almost like brand new. The colors are bright. You know, it seems like in the United States, you see owners, they have colors they use for 10 years. They don't even look like the same colors. And I was so impressed with that. And the fact that it's really a sport there rather than a way to make money.
It's definitely. And well, we only run once a week or sometimes twice a week. So it's a little bit less stress on the cars like that. You got owners there running 10 hours or 12 hours per week. There, a horse, a owner might run a couple of horses per week because of the amount of time we run. But definitely, it's more enthusiastic about it. It's more like a Saratoga Jamaica racing on once a week, because you can hear the noise down the stretch, you hear the roar, and it's more enthusiastic. People there are more interested about racing than it is right now in the United States, unless it's a Saratoga meet, a Del Mar meet, or the Keeneland meet, where we get all that interest. Or Belmont, when we got those big races. But it's they're very enthusiastic about racing there.
How'd you like to train Usain Bolt?
I don't think you need to train him. I think you just let him go run. I think you just let him go run whenever he's...
Have you been watching him in the Olympics?
Yeah, I've been. Yeah, the old Jamaicans watching him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's one thing with Jamaican. They support. They support it. At least they support their countrymen. So it's a lot of support in a way. Yeah, as long as you're from the island, there's always support there.
Tell me a little bit about Caymanas Park. What's that like?
Well, I grew up across the street, and I was pretty much go to school around the corner. So I was always at the track, and it was a nice, cool place to be at. I mean, my dad was a trainer there, and the racing was good. There were had some great good trainers came out there, good trainers, and good horsemen. It's I think right now it's a little rundown from back when I was there. It hasn't really developed as it should have over the period of time, but it's still good racing. And the purses right now are okay, competitive for Jamaican as far as Jamaican small countries concerned, federal country. So it's a nice track, big track. We've got a 5-furlong straight. You got a 9-furlong chute. It's a huge track, so it's a pretty huge track compared to track in the U.S. So Belmont might be the only track comparisons, except for the 5-furlong straight. But it's a great track.
Yeah, it's one of those tracks that has a lot of unique races during the card, which is fun. Like you may run a race around the turn, or you may run one on the straight, and gives you some options as a trainer as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think we get most of Jamaica was under the English, and you know the English, they got the straight races and all that. So that's where we've kind of developed our racing from English. And before, back in the days, most of the bread was influenced by English horses. Although we don't have a turf course there, but it was mostly English horses. Like, now we get the U.S. bred horses coming in, and it has changed over the years. But that's why the design of the track was basically from the English. That's why we have a straight, pretty much.
Have you ever saddled a horse there, Charlie?
No, never saddled a horse there. My dad left when I was there, when I was like 15, 16. My dad left for like 3 months, and I get to run the barn. That's close. I get to keep a hand off barn for 3 months. So that's the close I get to saddling one there. We never run nothing for 3 months when he was gone, because that's to make a system, but never saddle a horse there.
I'm glad you brought up your father, Carl, because he, of course, a trainer in Jamaica, and that's how you kind of got involved with racing. Tell me a little bit about your dad and his operation and how he got you started.
Well, he was a jockey at first. His dad was a jockey. He became a jockey, and then when he got too heavy, he went on to ride to training. And pretty much what he did from a small, he always brought from literature. He brought home the Thoroughbred Times back then, and all this stuff. I read everything about us. I knew a lot of the arts in the United States without even ever setting a foot here. I was reading a lot of stuff, and when I got to high school, I used to go to the barn before I go to school, and then after when I get from school, I go to the barn, check out with feeding. So I was always, once I got to high school, I was always there. Pretty much, I went to the barn before I went to school, and I went to the barn after I got back from school. So, and he brought the horses home. That needed time off. We had a little farm, and he showed me how to blister the legs, how to paint the legs, and all that stuff. So I started doing that when the horses came home that weren't racing no more. Needed a month or two off, 3 months off. They usually, and he taught me how to let, so I was painting the legs, blistering the legs, and doing all that little work on the side before I even got to the track, doing the track work and stuff. So that's where I started off, really, just learning about legs and the literature he brought home from magazine and stuff. I was reading all of that stuff. Yeah, we had a big, huge book. I remember when I was small, that by the Arsman Bible, huge book. I mean, it was huge. It started from where Arsman started from, the Arabians, and went all the way back to the bloodlines and a lot of different horses. But I read most of that book as much as I could read. And so that's where I pretty much got my start from, in the horse business, really. That's my dad bringing stuff home and horses and letting me paint them, show me how to place to them and what I had to do. And I did it from there until they're ready to go back to the track. I'll take care until they're ready to go back to the track. And that was it.
Did your dad train a lot of Jamaican breds, or did he come up to the sales, or how did he acquire the horses in his stable?
Well, he being a jockey at first, he had a good connection. So when he had the guys he rode for, when he started training, it was pretty much Jamaican bred horses that were bred in Jamaica. Cheap horses, not great stock, but cheap horses that Guy Honier and brought him. So he was a not one of the premier trainers, but he did win a lot of races, and he did pretty good with the stock he had down there.
Well, he won 50 races here in the States too, right?
Yeah, he won some races there. Yeah, he's trained there. He trained there when I got there. He started training me back a few years after I got here, and did okay, but again, didn't have much of a client. He didn't have clients, and his business way, how he operated his business, was just kind of not the right way. And I've been around his how he operated business, and it was never the right way, because it was more like training for friends, not getting paid and stuff. And I decided when I started training, I'm going to do the opposite of what he as far as business wise. So pretty much I learned from his mistake as far as business or concern. Doing the part of business, training is a different thing. With part of business, part of the game that you got to take care of. So you can pay help and feed horses and manage your barn. It was very important that I can say that.
Yeah, it's so important, and I always tell people that the business part of it is equally as important as the horse part of it. You got to take care of both.
Very.
I was more like your dad when I was training.
I know he was terrible when he came to dad. He was just a terrible business person. So, I saw the downfall at that end. So pretty much I was a witness to that. So pretty much that was good experience for me, not to get into that mode that he was in. So I learned from his mistake pretty much. But he was a good horseman. That's a good horseman. But he was a stubborn horseman. He stuck to his old ways. He never changed. He never wanted to change. he wouldn't take changes.
Our friend Safi Joseph, who's from Barbados, you may or may not know him, but his dad works with him, and his dad was a trainer as well, and they're always button heads talking about the hard-headed horsemen.
They are old timers are great to get knowledge from, but they're stuck in their ways where they don't want to move forward. They don't move forward with time. So that's the difficult part about the old timers. The old timers are great, knowledgeable, great recipe for a lot of stuff, and they got great ideas for a lot of stuff. And two horsemen, but they want to be stuck in the 60s and 70s. They don't want to move forward.
Talking with trainer Charlton Baker on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Charlton, how would you describe your approach to training horses and your philosophy?
Well, pretty much my philosophy. I got most of my philosophy from a trainer in Finger Lakes by the name of Mike Farrar Sr. And he pretty much taught me. He didn't teach me, I would say I learned from him, because I studied his approach. He was the best there when I got there. And I worked with him for 3 to 4 years. And I pretty much know his training routine in and out, because I study his chart. I sit in the office, study his chart on every horse. I could tell what he's going to do the next day when he after anything he did. I pretty much knew his routine that good. So I pretty much thought it is routine, and I fell in love with his routine, getting horse ready after the layoff, getting one, maintaining one after he started running for a period of time and stuff like that. So pretty much my routine was pretty much basically off is, and over the years I kind of developed my own here and there with a little changes in between. Every horse are individuals, so you got to treat them as individuals at the same time. So you treat horses individuals. If you got good eaters, you got poor eaters, you space their work a little different, depends on what they do, how much it takes out of them, and all that stuff. So pretty much I try to be a trainer. I got a system, but I do favors for individuals. You got a system where you know, either works every 6 days, getting prepared in one. Some horses might need seven, some horses might need 10, depends on the individual. So that's pretty much my thing. I try to know my horse and trying to make the training schedule for that individual.
You know, it's interesting because so often we hear that, you know, horses today aren't as tough as horses back in the heydays of horse racing, let's say. And I'm always curious, do we maybe coddle our horses a little bit more today because of the money that's involved, Charlton?
Yes. You know what? The proof is that they're still there out there that it's not as tough, because those horses back in the days, they run, as a 2-year-old, they run 10, 15 times. I mean, a litter of farms and horses that run as a 2-year-old, they still have a full 2-year-old and 3-year-old carrier of this day in one season. So, really and truly, I really don't know if we do cuddle them a little more. I think right now the breeding has gotten to where it's a little more inbreeding has made it a little weaker. And because we are breeding for speed, we're not breeding for what they breed for back in the days. I think we are breeding for speed, and so the horses are that we keep on inbreeding to make them to get speed, and we don't breed back like we just used to breed for distance back in the days. I think we breed a little more distant horses. So I think it's gotten a little, the breeding has gotten weaker, definitely.
You could hear the wind whipping through the cell phone there with Charlton. Was that Usain Bolt flying by?
Oh no, I walked out in the wind for a minute.
You do such a great job with 2-year-olds, and a lot of people have a problem getting young horses to the races. Talk about your 2-year-old operation and your system with them.
Honestly, with 2-year-olds, it's about the individual. It's about the maturity of the horse, and physical and both mental, and if they are ready to go as a 2-year-old. So pretty much we try and get them ready to run, get them fit to run, see what kind of ability they got. If they're New York kind of quality, we run them here. If they're not, we send them to single legs. So pretty much the same approach with the old horse coming off the layoff. Get them ready, get them fit, get them ready enough to run. Mentally, physically, they got to be there. And if they're good enough, and if we think highly of them, we give them extra schooling of getting dirt in their face, putting them behind horses, getting dirt in their face, gate work, enough gate work, get them standing the gate, and all of that. So pretty much they have an opportunity to perform good first out if we're shooting that way. If it's a horse that's going to need, if it's a 2-year-old that's going to need a little schooling and a little bit of, you know, you got those horses that need one race or two, we might just go and figure they're going to get better after the first outing. So it's all depends on that individual. I had a couple of guys this year that were doing great, and seems like they had everything. The mental, they were good. They were great mentally. Actually, handled every situation I put them in as far as working behind horses. I had them come out from behind horses, come in between horses, and they were great. So those are the ones that you think can actually win first time out, or if not first time, in a few starts.
How long does it take you to know if a 2-year-old can really run?
Well, usually to me, I've gotten tricked so many times after the first few works that it, after they get up to 5/8 in most horses, after they get to 5/8, they can show speed. They can go too fast for 3/8, and maybe that's all they're going to go fast for. But when they get to 5/8, you have a good idea what you got.
You said you've been tricked a few times. How'd you get fooled?
Because they go fast as 3/8. You work horse the first time as 3/8, and he goes 35, and you think you might have the world beater. And you get to 5/8, and he goes 103, 104, and they don't run three furlong races. So that's where you get fooled right off the bat. If you made that decision, you got a nice horse right off that 3/8 work. So once you get to 5/8 and you get them a little distance, where they actually going to run 5.5 or 6 furlong, you know they can maintain that speed for 5 furlong or 6 furlong, then you know you might have a decent horse.
Do you go to the sales a lot? Do you buy two-year-olds in training? What's your philosophy on that?
Not much no more. I used to go to the Midwest sale in Timonium a lot. When I just started out, I used to go buy a couple for myself because I basically started training for myself. For the most of my career, basically I was most of my biggest owner. Until lately, I've accumulated some owners. But I used to go to sale, to the team owner sale, and I look for horses that everybody look for everything different. I wasn't looking for expensive horses. I looked for horses in my price range that I could afford, and horses that I think could have done be okay as far as look was concerned that would do in New York. And I try to get the best breed I can, get from my buck too. But you know where you're not gonna be able to add 100,000 up there. Where I was looking at that and those. So I do go, but I'm not as much as I used to in the past.
Talking to trainer Charlie Baker here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
So now you have clients that are sending you horses that they've bred or they've acquired. And is there a difference when you didn't pick them out, so to speak, that you have to deal with different issues that maybe you wouldn't have selected that horse necessarily?
Not really. No, not really. I wouldn't say I because most of the clients I have that send me babies, they got great people that goes and look at horses for them. I mean, I've trained for Aquaface right now, and he the person that selects his horse does a great job. And I'm usually satisfied with those horses I get in. And I got kinds of breed horses, and it depends on where they come in. When they get in, you pretty much got to work with what we got, pretty much. So it doesn't matter if one something that I would have selected or not. You still got to figure them out and train them accordingly and get them to be at their best. So pretty much it doesn't really matter, because I might go to the sale and select a horse and get him back to the barn, and I'm not as much in love with him as I was when I bought him. So it's the same. It's pretty much the same.
Each and every trainer who appears on Trainer Talk receives a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, and of course this show all presented by our friends at Fasig Tipton. Charlton, stay with us. We're going to get to a short break at the bottom of the hour. We will come back. We'll do the second half of the program and talk about some of your more memorable moments, including a big win in the True North this past season. We'll do that here in just a couple minutes. Jude will take you the rest of the way in the second half of the show. That's coming up on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Sale, August 8th and 9th in Saratoga Springs, New York, with 252 selected yearlings by the world's leading sires. The Saratoga Sale produced 4 Eclipse champions in 2015, more than any other sale in the world.
American Foal is finally the one! American Foal has won the Triple Crown!
But there is absolutely no stopping Songbird. It is all Songbird. Mike Smith aboard, crushing the field.
Stella Wind and Victor Espinosa could not have been more impressive in the Santa Anita Oaks.
But Teppan has won the Breeders' Cup Mile.
And in stats recently released by the Blood Horse Market Watch, Saratoga was once again named the number one major North American yearling sale by percentage of Grade 1 winners, graded stakes winners, and stakes winners from horses sold. For more information, visit BasicTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
Dedicated to the improvement of thoroughbred breeding and racing. A single promise that has never changed, but one that has evolved to meet the needs of equine athletes and their owners through continual innovation, commitment, and leadership. From fan development to safety, from aftercare to cutting-edge technology, the Jockey Club has proudly served the thoroughbred industry since 1894. Visit jockeyclub.com for more information.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish to the classic.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
Everybody wants a stakes horse, and the place to get one is Select Sales. Since their first Saratoga consignment in 2012, Select Sales has sold 66% graded stakes horses, including the magnificent champion and Grade 1 winner, Teppan. Select Sales is currently the number two consigner in the country, with seven graded stakes winners, including Teppan, Stonetastic, Sharp Azteca, Catalina Red, and Kid Cruz. Everybody at Saratoga wants a stakes horse. Your odds on to find one at Select Sales.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Holy Boss rides the rail in joking trails, and Dad's Caps gets away. Dad's Caps is opened up to a two-length lead after a 44 3/2 mile. Always Sunshine is taken second. Catalina Red is full out. On the inside is Holy Boss, and Joking is trying to make a late run on the far outside. Joking is closing in, trying to get Dad's Caps. Dad's Caps, here comes Joking. It is going to be Joking. Joking and Manny Franco running down Dad's Caps and Holy Boss in a final time of 1 minute 8.04 seconds.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk. This is Jude Feld, and we're talking with Charlie Baker. Charlie, that clip there, that had to bring back some fond memories, huh?
Yeah, that was exciting. I was so excited. That was an exciting day.
That was your first graded stakes winner, Joking.
Yep, it definitely was, and that was a memorable moment.
Talk about him a little bit. What makes him so talented?
I think he was always meant to be talented. Back in his, one of his first few races, he had a 91 Byers that he looked great, and he was always talked about. He was a nice horse then, but he never really just lived up to it. I think he was just a nervous horse that was really a nervous wreck. Would pretty much wash out in the post parade and kind of lost his race, before he actually went to the gate.
So you got him.
When I claimed him and we got him here, he walked the stall pretty good. He was a stall walker. He was nervous. That's what a nervous horse does. And we kind of gave him a window so he could see the horse next door, and that quieted him down quite a bit. And from there, he just got better over the period of time. We never trained. I stopped training him on the main track. We took him to the pony track because he was so nervous out there. He never really did what we wanted him to do. So we took him to the small track, which is the pony track in Belmont. And he was great there. I think that made a big difference with him as far as getting him settled down, keeping him a little bit focused more, a little bit. And over the period of time, he started getting better as far as his nervousness was concerned. He kept him a little calmer. And I think with that, he got better as a horse, definitely.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think our listeners appreciate hearing things like that. When you claim a horse and you make those subtle changes, it makes all the difference in the world. Talk about that philosophy and the little things you observe along the way with horses that you claim.
Well, the first thing you try and do is trying to learn the horse. I mean, that's basically my policy. I try to know the horse when I claim them, and it's like having a new puppy, you go and try and know about him. So you observe him. You start training. You start off. You might jog him, and you go when you start galloping. You see what he does, and how he's eating, and because that plays so much about how he does eat. If he's a poor eater, you try to get him to eating a little better, and whatever you can do to make him better. So it's the interview is you're trying to know them and try to figure out what way you're going to train them to make them better than or do what you want them to do, pretty much. If he's nervous, you're going to try and get him settled. If he's not eating, you're trying to get him to eat. If you got to cut his rut load a little bit, if you got to increase it, you got to increase it. But it's just trying to figure them out, pretty much, basically trying to figure that ours out in a period of time before you run him. You might run him back a month from when you claim, or a month and a half, but you're trying to figure him out and make his work scheduled for him for what you think he needs. Sometimes you might be off, sometimes you hit it on the nail, but that's basically what I do with a new horse that I acquire.
Yeah, it takes time sometimes to learn their idiosyncrasies.
Yeah, definitely. It does take a little time. Sometimes you click with one and they fit right in your system, and sometimes it takes a little time for them to figure them out. Sometimes it takes a little more time than others. Some horses you can click. Some horses get in your system and they fit right there, and some horses you get in them in your system and they just don't fit. So it's all just part of the work, part of the job.
Was he the best horse you ever claimed?
Yeah, I think he is. Definitely has become one. The next one before that was Expressionless. So they had that I claimed earlier, a few years before I came joking. But he has become the best horse I've claimed.
What's been your best training job? Maybe not a horse as famous as joking, but a horse that really had a lot of things you needed to overcome.
Overcome, okay. A tough question there. It's possibly Moonlight Song, tell you the truth. Moonlight Song might have been my best training job, although he doesn't run it often right now. But I got him as a four-year-old, as his latest four-year-old here, and we made it to the races. And the previous 2 years, he didn't make. He was on the trap, but never made it to the races. And I got him out of the 4 years. And he made it to the race, and he was a real nervous horse also. And we got him to where we couldn't even stand him. When we get to him to the track and try to stand him, he wouldn't stand. He just wanted to go. Never got until we got him to stand, and now he's standing there. He'll stand there for 30 minutes. But over the years, he got better at doing the stuff we wanted to do. So I think as far as this, soundness was concerned, is the old thing that made him up. I think he might have been my best job as a trained horse, really. He had more issues and more stuff that we had to overcome just to get him to run his better races, which he has been doing for the last maybe 3 or 4 years. But at first, he wasn't that kind of horse.
That's nice that you have horses for 3 or 4 years at a time. A lot of horses these days only have meats, you know?
That's true, but Moonlight, you last 2 years, you were maybe once every year. So he's had it for 3 or 4 years, but he hasn't put a lot of start to get him. But he's a nice horse, so I'd rather have him in the barn and he run once a year than not having him at all. So I tell you, he's a really nice horse. Cool horse to have in the barn.
That's great. Yeah, you have several barns. You have Finger Lakes, and then Belmont, and now Saratoga. How does that all work?
Well, I'm always on the road. That's pretty much it. I usually spend most of my time in Belmont when we're here in Belmont, and my brother is in in single A scenario, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks, depends on how necessary I'm near there. But most of my spinal is in New York right now. And right now between Finger Lakes and Saratoga and Belmont, I'm basically in Saratoga, but it's a midway between both tracks. So it's easier to leave Saratoga, go to Finger Lakes and leave Saratoga from the Belmont. It's a little bit less of a distance. So it's an easier ride. Because I'm in Belmont today, tomorrow I'll leave here today, later today, and be back in Saratoga for another week or so, and then I might end up slow down to Finger Lakes for a few days and go back to Saratoga.
Yeah. Just, you need a chauffeur.
I'm on the road constantly. It's something I've been used to. I've been doing it for a while now. So.
Yeah, it's always tough to me for Eastern trainers. I trained on the West Coast, and it's kind of like a captive audience. You know, there's only one track running at a time. But East Coast trainers have a rough go in that there's so many places to run, and you guys always seem to find the best spots all over the country. But you got to be in a lot of different places, and you got to have top-notch help.
Yeah, definitely. Health is a huge issue. And I have great kit. I'm knocking on wood, I have great health, really do. And Saratoga and Belmont, I do have great health. And my brother is in Finger Lakes, so he maintains everything there for me. So it's great to have the health. You need that. If you don't have that, it's pretty much impossible for you to do all you do, have an awesome different place. So you gotta have good help. You gotta have eyes that are looking out for you and relating back to you, and communication as far as injury loss are doing.
I read that some of your grooms have been with you a long time, and that's a tribute to your program. If the grooms are sticking around and working for you, that's a good sign.
Yeah, definitely. And it's great when you got someone with you, and know your program, know your system, and it's just a lot less headache or a lot less. You got to tell someone that to do day in, day out. It's they've been around, they know the system, they know the program. So it's great. Definitely. And Finger Lakes, the same. Guy's been with me for 10, 15 years. So it's been good.
Well, it's not just the horse players that are paying attention to your success at Saratoga and Belmont Park. It's big owners too, like Sugar Maple Farm and Ansu Stable and Ken and Sarah Ramsey. These people are all giving you horses. Talk about your clients and how exciting it is to get this show on the road in the Big Apple.
Well, it's been a while coming. I mean, it's always great to have good clients. I mean, you suck. You definitely get better horses, and you need horses to compete. That's the name of it. It's horse racing, so you gotta have horses, and the better quality you have, it's more. You can be more competitive. So it's good that I'm actually great, that I'm getting a little recognition, so I can attract a little better clients. Not better, but with horses that can compete with better horses, really.
Yeah, it's great to have those horses. It keeps you getting up in the morning, huh? When you got some nice horses in the barn.
Definitely. I mean, you're excited. You want to get out. You want to get to the barn just to. If it's not going great, I mean, you still it's your job. You're still getting up, but it's a little harder getting up when you know what you got is maybe a couple of 10,000 flavors. Are you know exactly what you got when you got a young horse that are running major races, are good races? It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier.
Yeah. Well. You won a stakes called the George W. Barker Handicap 6 times. You won it 5 years in a row. Talk about that streak.
Yeah, that was a great streak because I won it five times in a row with two horses, and I owned both horses. The first good horse I had was Top Shooter, and then he was followed right up with. Next couple of years by a horse named Johnny By Night. And he won it three in a row, and Top Shooter won it 2 years in a row. So, and then we came back and won it another a couple of years after. We had a lost, finished second of the following year after the five row, and then came back and won it in sixth time.
When you have a race like that that you have had a lot of success in, do you go out looking specifically for horses that may run there?
I did that then. And the last few years, I think I have had horses the last few years I didn't know that I could have run in there. But because they were more lucrative purses in New York, I kept them in New York. I didn't actually go ship them to single A's or run in those races. So when I was basically faced the single A's, that was one of the premier races there. So I always wanted to win that. So I was always preparing the horses. They got the winter off. They came back. They were prepared for that race. They were pretty much the schedule was set for that race. No, not so much. It's only a $50,000 race, and a launch race purse in New York is a lot significantly more than a that stake race in single leg. So back then I did prepare for that race. No, I don't that much.
Well, that's kind of a tribute to your ability to get a horse ready for a race that you're pointing for. That's so important when you get to these bigger races now that you're participating in, to be able to point for a race. Maybe, you know, not have a straw in your path is always good when you're training horses. But talk about that, pointing a horse for a specific race and what's involved in that.
Personally, I think it's a lot easier. Point them for individual race. You can set your schedule from that point backwards and know what you're gonna actually do or is weather permit and what you're gonna do. I mean, for that race, when you're pretty much going out and waiting for a race in the book, or it's like you're maintaining a fitness to a certain level. So if the race comes on the extra, or the race comes on the book, You're pretty much ready to run. But when you're pointing for a race, I think it's so much easier because you can set your schedule. And if you know yours, you know how far away from the race you want to breeze them, how many times you want to breeze them for that race. And so it's pretty much, I think it's a lot easier just having your mindset set on one race where you know it's a 6 weeks or 5 weeks or even 2 months, it doesn't matter. But you pretty much set your schedule from the race backwards to the point where you're at. And you always can make changes due to weather. If you can't breathe, if you wanted to breathe on the 5th and it's raining, you can always make adjustments and go forward with that.
Yeah, the late, great Charlie Whittingham, he always said it was easier to train stakes horses than claiming horses. And I guess that's part of the reason when you're training claiming horses, you got to do things on the fly.
Yeah, you do things on the fly. You pretty much maintain them to run. You know you're ready to run if the race comes up on the extra. You know if you're ready to run. You know the race might be in the book. It might not go, but it might come back 2 days later. But you kind of you work them accordingly, and you kind of space your work where your system is at, and you're pretty much ready to go whenever that race comes up. But when you're pointing for one, you pretty much have your bullseye right there. So you have the schedule going. If everything goes perfectly into that race, you're comfortable with what you got going into the race. And unless when the claimer, you might have wanted to work tomorrow, and the race might be an overnight on the extra. So you might have to run without actually getting that work you wanted to put in because you didn't have a time and when the race might go or not. So it's a lot easier personally.
Yeah. How challenging is it now when you get the book and there's races in the book, maybe 10 races in the book, and then there's two extras in the book, and then there's another 10 or 12 extras on the overnight.
Overnight.
I mean, yeah. How frustrating is that?
It's frustrating, but it's racing right now. It's made it a lot different from back in the days. But it's racing right now. That's what you look for. It's just field size are smaller, and races might go 2 weeks ago with 12 horses, and it might come back, and it might not go. I mean, that's how it's racing right now. So it's frustrating, but you pretty much kind of got to learn to deal with it and be flexible enough to deal with that and prepare the horses for whenever the race goes. Pretty much you got to have them ready to go. for the race. So, and so if you're breathing every 7 days or whatever, you maintain that and you maintain a fitness to go whenever that race goes.
Yeah, you keep waiting on the race, and then sometimes you give them a little short work or something because you really feel they could use a 5.8, but you don't want to overdo it.
You don't want to actually end the race. And you never know when it's gonna go. You pretty much train for the race in the book, and when it doesn't go, they might bring it back a day or so late or 2 days. It might go through the end of overnight before it actually goes. So you might be planning on working 6 days out, and you might end up being 8 days away from the race because it didn't go the first time, they brought it back the other night, and you don't want to put a rut in between because it might be too close to the race. It's a little touchy, but it's something you kind of learn to deal with our trying to figure it out and do the best that you can do according to.
Do the clients ever give you a hassle about that? Like, oh, I was planning on coming to the races on Saturday. Now the race doesn't go. I got a business meeting on Wednesday. How does that work?
No, I tell you, most of my clients have been pretty good. They're pretty good. They pretty much know the name, the race, the game, and they're pretty cool as far as that is concerned. I mean, once in a while, a guy might get frustrated because the race, they got a horse ready to go, and the race didn't go, and they're looking forward to see the horse run, and the race might not go twice in a row, and you're up 2 months not running, and it makes everyone frustrated, but we got no control over that. So it's like it doesn't make sense being concerned about it because that's what it is. I mean, you're not the only one waiting for that race to go, so it's frustrating, but it's part of business.
Yeah.
Take it.
Are you very active on social media?
Not really. I was on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook no more, but I'm not really on social media much at all.
So if somebody's looking to give Charlie Baker a horse, how do they get a hold of you?
They would have to call me. They would somehow get my phone number and give me a call.
Okay.
Pretty much right now, yeah.
Are you always looking for new clients?
I think I'm definitely looking for new clients. Right now, I'm always looking for new clients. Right now, I'm pretty much, as far as fall capacity is concerned, I'm pretty filled. As allotted in Belmont, I'm always looking for more stalls there. But I figure there's a 20 trainers looking for more stalls also. But as far as capacity is concerned, I'm pretty where they gave me 26 stalls last year. And now I got, actually between Belmont and Saratoga, I got over 30 horses. So what happens is, This meet coming up, Belmont meet, where how much all they allowed me to do.
Well, certainly the meet you're having at Saratoga has got to open the eyes of the racing secretaries at the tracks that you're at and get you some more stall allotments.
Well, I'm open. I wish we had a few more stall in Saratoga, but Saratoga is always a hard meet to get stalls. That's what you want, and
well, you'll get more next year. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah. Okay. Put in a good word for me. There's no guarantee.
I know there's never a guarantee, but
no guarantee.
It's one of those things nowadays that like the number of horses you run and all that. It's all published. But in the old days, you used to have to keep your own stats and go in and say, hey, this guy uses your track as a training center. He's got 40 stalls. Yeah. He's run 3 times, and I've got 3 stalls, and I've run 40 times. So.
Definitely. Yeah, we're trying to run as much as we can. That's what we had to run. Some stars are ready to go. We're ready to go. We're running them.
Yeah, especially at a meet like Saratoga where it's a short meet, so you don't need to take horses up there when you have other training facilities where you can get horses ready. You can take your horses to Saratoga that are fit and ready to run.
Pretty much all the horses we got there are ready to run. And we do have horses still in Belmont that are ready to run, but kind of rotate them. We have run, one might run, if one runs today, he's not going to run for another 2 weeks, we might send him back to Belmont and bring one in that's going to run a week or two and try to keep them, get them accustomed to the track and the surroundings and all that. So we've pretty much been rotating all meets with horses back and forth.
Yeah, that's a good system. What do you enjoy most about training horses?
Well, I enjoy the whole deal about training horses. When I got into the training part, it was just a love for the love of it. Really and truly, I love everything about them. I love this. I fell in love with training horses when I was like 5, 6 years old. My dad was starting. That's what all I wanted to do. Really and truly, going to high school. That's all I wanted to do. I went to high school for the career again, so that's what I wanted. I want to be a trainer. So it's everything that I wanted. So I'm pretty much living my dream, and training horses and doing okay at it is plus. It's just not plus.
That's great. If not everybody gets to enjoy their work and do what they dreamed about doing when they were younger. Yeah, if you weren't a trainer, is there another job that you would have enjoyed, you think?
You know, I can't even think of one that I would enjoy, because I tried a few jobs. I worked in a factory when I first came to this. I worked there. I never really liked that. The training was pretty much all I wanted to do. That's all I wanted to do.
That's cool.
If it wasn't training, it would be working with horses in some different aspect of it, but I'd be with horses.
Yeah, the animals are absolutely unbelievable. When you're not driving between racetracks and you're not at a racetrack, what kind of things do you enjoy doing?
Well, I got 12 kids, and when I get a chance, I spend all the time with them. When I get to spend my kids are in Kinder Lake, so when I get there and I'm there, I try to spend as much time as my son likes to play soccer. We play. He's 6 years old. Play a little soccer. He likes to go to the park all the time. We go to the park. I was just trying to spend as much time as I can get with him. When I'm so much on the road and out of town, there's so much that I spend as much time as I can when I'm there, which I have to make. I'm there for a week. I go a week and hour. Now there on holiday, spending much time getting them to Saratoga for a week and hour. So that's pretty much it.
So being a dad is your... your most fun pastime.
Yeah, definitely most fun pastime. Because when I'm not at the track, I'm pretty much want to be home relaxing and spending time with them and doing stuff they want to do. They want to go somewhere. If my daughter, she likes to go to the movies, so I might go to the movie. Most of the time, I'm there with her. I might be dozing off, but I'm.
Yeah, it's a good place for a trainer to take a nap.
Yeah.
Oh, the all-important trainer nap. that's unbelievable. That's really great. Have you gotten bitten by the American sports bug at all?
Yeah, I love sports. That's, when I'm home, that's all I watch. I watch ESPN. I basketball, football. That's all I watch on TV, really. I'm big on sports.
Who's your teams?
Well, I'm very happy LeBron brought that championship down to Cleveland. And New England is my football team. So you can see I try to hang around winners.
There you go.
Yeah, but I was a LeBron fan. I'm happy for him to brought that championship to Cleveland early against the Hats. As it was, I gave up. I thought they were on it, and they were down 3-1, and that was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was amazing. Well, Charlie, it's been great spending time with you. Really enjoyed this visit, and can't wait to talk to you in person up at Saratoga.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Well, that was a lot of fun, and want to thank our producer Lee Delapina for pushing all the right buttons. And for Mike Penna, who's getting his hair cut, and myself, Jude Feld, thanks for tuning in to Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all, of course, sponsored by Fasig Tipton. Have a good night, everybody, and good night, Barbados.